being prayed for by the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with His expansion and expansions of the expansion. Their holy names were Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. These celebrated incarnations thus appeared in four forms as the son of Maharaj Dasharath, purport. Lord Ramchandra and his brothers Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna were all Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands into many, many forms, Advaitam Achyutam Ananam Anantarupam. Although they are one and the same, Vishnu Tattva has many forms and incarnations, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita 539, Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan. The Lord is situated in many forms, such as Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. And these forms may exist in any part of His creation. All these forms exist permanently, eternally, as individual personalities of Godhead. And they resemble many candles, all equally powerful. Lord Ramchandra, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna, being Vishnu Tattva, are all equally powerful. They became the sons of Maharaj Dasharath in response to prayers by the demigods. So, this is explaining how the Lord appeared as the sons of Dasharath. Some years ago in Mayapur, our godbrother, Atmatattva Prabhu, gave some narrations of Ram Leela taken from different Puranas and some of the different Ramayanas. And he selected them according to their presentation of Siddhanta, the proper Siddhanta. And some very interesting new ideas are presented there. Of course, the Leela of the Lord is ever fresh and always new and attractive and exciting. But we thought we could read some of those selections, and over the next 2 or 3 days until Monday, and maybe go through the whole pastime in a very summary way. So first of all, this verse mentions that the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His four features as Ram and Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna appeared as the son of King Dasharath. So why was King Dasharath called Dasharath? Why did he have the name Dasharath? Das means 10 and Rath means chariot. So he explains. Lord Ramachandra appeared in the Ikshvaku dynasty. Therefore, Ramachandra is known as Ikshvaku Kuladan, or the wealth of the family of Ikshvaku Kuladan. Kula means dynasty, and dan means property or valuable jewel. So Ramachandra is the most valuable jewel of the Ikshvaku dynasty. The reason his father was known as Dasarath, because he could fight in 10 directions simultaneously, because he was expert in all mystic powers. So when demons would attack Dasarath, King Dasarath, he would expand himself into 10 forms. And his wrath that he was riding on, his chariot, would expand into 10 chariots. Because there are only 10 directions. There are the 8 cardinal directions, north, south, east, west, northeast, southeast, etc. There's 8 directions on this plane. Then there's the upward direction and the downward direction. So there's 10 directions. So if anyone fights you, they have to approach you from one of those directions, up or down, north or south, northeast or southeast. So Dasharath would expand his chariot. His chariot would be 10 chariots. So when the demon would go, the asura would go to attack Dasharath, they would see 10 chariots and 10 Dasharaths fighting simultaneously from 10 directions. So Ramachandra's father was no small timer. he was Ati Rati. He was a very powerful fighter with all mystic powers. So that is why he got the name. And he was, of course, Dasharath was very famous for fighting on behalf of the demigods. He would often help them and other righteous kings. King Dasharath, he married Kaushalya. But only one daughter was born, and her name was Shanti. As you know, Shanti means peace. But even though King Dasharath had a daughter named Shanti, he had no peace. He was not peaceful. He was unhappy in one sense, because how would his dynasty go on? So Shanti, of course, being the daughter, she would be given to another prince, or who would become, she would become his wife, and she would become part of the other dynasty. This is the Vedic system, that the dynasty is represented by the son, because a daughter is given away to another family. So she enters the other family and she becomes part of that dynasty. That's what he's explaining. So then he's thinking, what about my dynasty, Ikshvaku dynasty? Dasharath was worried. Then he married Sumitra. So at least from Kaushalya he had a daughter, but Sumitra had no child. So Dasharath, he was getting old, and he gave up the idea of producing dynasties. He started to think, how is it possible? So then he was advised to marry again. So he married Kaikeyi from the Kaikeya province. And it explains that the kingdom of Kosala, which is the kingdom of Dasharath, it extended from Tibet. Tibet is quite far north. There's Nepal and then the Himalayas and Tibet. They went from Tibet all the way down to the river Godavari and Andhra Pradesh. So practically the whole of India was the Kosala kingdom. So Dasharath was very worried that after his death, his kingdom would be broken to pieces. So then Vasishtha advised him. But when he married Kaikeyi was that Kaikeyi's father said that you have other queens that you've already married, but with my daughter, any children that you have from her, those children should inherit your kingdom. You have to promise. This is some kind of kula, this kind of promise, some kind of, there's a term for it he uses here. Kanya Shulka. This Kanya Shulka, some kind of, he had to write it down. Yes, I promise that my kingdom I will give to your son. It will be Kaikeyi's. Even if my other queens have my Sumitra or Kaushalya, I will give the kingdom to your son. So there, on those conditions, he received Kaikeyi as his wife. Then Vasishtha Muni, he advised, because he wanted to have a son, so he advised Dasharath to do an Ashvamedha Yajna. So he started this Ashvamedha Yajna. Of course, you have to send a challenge horse around the world, and it's a whole to collect money from all the neighboring kings to do this yajna. So then while the yajna was going on, Sumantra, one old advisor, very old man, he remembered something. He said, listen, Dasharath, don't you remember that once Sanat Kumara came here and he told you that if you want to get a son, you'll not get a son by doing Ashvamedha Yajna, but you will receive a son by doing another kind of yajna. It's called Putra Kameshti. Putra Kameshti Yajna. So then Dasharath inquired from Vasishtha, how can we do that yajna? And he said, oh, actually, to perform that yajna, a very special purohit is required. A very special head priest is required. Oh, what are the qualifications? Well, this purohit, he must have never seen a woman in his life, at least before his marriage. He must not really know anything what woman is. So they were thinking, this might be a little difficult to find a man, to find a priest, a purohit who doesn't know anything. So finally they came to know that there was one such personality as Rishyasringa. And Rishyashringa, he was born, it's a long story, he was born as a son of a deer or something. A long story he tells for many pages. And then of course, he had these little horns on his head like a deer. Because he was produced by a deer and some sage or something. So then finally there was all arrangement made that they brought Rishyashringa to the kingdom to do this Putra Kameshri. But he had already commenced. Dasharatha had already started his Ashwamedha Yajna. While that was started, he started the preparations. Then Sumantra told him, wait a minute, you're doing this, but you should do this Putra Kameshi Yajna. So then what happened is they continued with the Ashwamedha Yajna, and right alongside the Ashwamedha Yajna, Rishyashringa came to do the Putra Kameshi Yajna. So as he was doing it, when he finished with the Purnahoti, which is the last, I think, is the final act, then from the fire, the Yajna Purusha came out. It was a very dark black figure. He was 3 miles tall. He had a huge kumbha in his hand. He was holding Lord Narayan in the kumbha, so it could not be a small affair. Can't be very big. So he said to Dasharatha, please give this sweet rice in this pot to your queens. And Dasharatha was looking at the size of the pot. Huge pot. The pot was as big as this room. Maybe bigger. And there were only how many queens? 3-4 queens. And he was told, you feed this sweet, the contents, you divide this up and you distribute all this sweet rice to your queens. He was saying, it's impossible. Even Madhu Mangal couldn't eat that much sweet rice. You know, Krishna's coward boy or, you know, some like that. So then he was thinking, so then Rishyashringa, the Purohit, he asked the Yajna Purush, why are you giving such a big pot of kheer to these human beings that they can't even possibly hold? Then the Yajna Purusha said, the personality who is coming is so powerful that you cannot reduce him to a smaller size than this. Then Rishyashringa, he closed his eyes and he said, ah, anoraniyan mahato mahiyan, bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest, that who he is in this pot. And then he told the Yajna Purush, you give the pot to me. In other words, Rishyashringa, he understood, because it wasn't very clearly told, it was kind of covered language, who was in the pot. He understood that the Supreme Personality of God was in the pot. That's why the pot was so big. He's Supreme Lord Narayan is not a small, you become a little pot of kheer and say, here, God's in this little pot. But then Rishyashringa is saying, yes, God is bigger than the biggest. Anoraniyan Mahato Mahiyan. He's Mahato Mahiyan, but he's also smaller than the smallest. Anayora Aniyan. God is inside the atom. The smallest part of material creation is the atom, but inside the atom is Chaitya Guru, Antaryami. Otherwise there's no movement there, there's no actions and reactions. Nothing goes on without the touch of the Lord. So he received the pot, and as soon as Rishyashringa received this huge pot, then it became very, very small. By the prayers and requests of Rishyashringa, the Lord reduced his Aishwarya, and the pot became small. This is like the interplay between Aishwarya Bhav and Madhurya Bhav. Sometimes the Lord displays his Aishwarya before the Bhakta, and the Bhakta, his intimacy of love, his intimate exchange with the Lord is somewhat reduced and diminished and disturbed by that display of grandeur and power and Aishwarya and opulence. And the Bhakta is thinking, my Lord, what can I do? You're showing me, Mother Yashoda showed Krishna this universal form, and she was thinking, what is this? How am I supposed to breastfeed the universal form? With thousands of eyes and thousands and millions of mouths, and everywhere is hands and faces. Sarvato panipadam tat, sarvato kshikshromakam. And then she was feeling, where's my little Damodar? Where's my little baby? And then her bhakti is coming out, so then the Lord reciprocated with his devotee and he removed that Aishwarya. He took away that Virata Rup Darshan from Mother Yashoda at Brahmandagat, and then he showed his sweet, lovable form. so she could serve him in a human-like way, very intimate and personal way. So Rishi Ashringa, he's seeing a situation. Here we have the Leela of Maharaj Dasarath and Ramachandra's Avirbhav. But there's all this Aishwarya is being displayed, this huge pot, 3 Yajna Purusha's 7 kilometers tall, and this huge pot, 1 kilometer wide pot. But this is Nara Leela. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead's Nara Leela. This is not his Leela as Bhagavan. This is Bhagavan, but not in this Aishwarya. This is his Nara Leela. The characteristic of Krishna or Bhagavan's Nara Leela is sweetness. Sweetness. His Nara means human-like. It's human-like. He's like about human size, not miles and miles, huge figure. It's sweet and intimate. So then Rishi Ashringa, by his devotion and by his prayers, and the Lord said, yes, all right, I will accommodate. I will present myself in a normal feature. Just the unlimited absolute truth, who is impossible to contain because he's unlimited, Ananta Rupam. He agreed to reduce himself to fit in a small pot of kheer. Dasarath took that sweet rice, he gave half to Kaushalya, and then 1/4 to Sumitra and Kaikeyi. After Kaikeyi drank it, there was still some left. So that also was given to Sumitra. In this way, the Lord came as Lord Ramachandra into Kaushalya's womb. He came as Lakshman and Shatrughna in Sumitra's womb. And he came as Bharat and Kaikeyi's womb. Vasudev, came as Ramachandra. Sankarshan came as Lakshman. It was like yesterday was Ramanuja's Avirbhav. So we're explaining how Ramanuja is described as being incarnation of Sankarshan or Lakshman. Same. Sankarshan came as Lakshman. The Sudarshan disc came as Bharat. And the Panchajanya Kanshal came as Shatrughna. So this is kind of a very quick summary of the birth. Now there's some description of the childhood pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. Kind of a quick, we're jumping quite long, big area here. So what happened was that, of course, you know that the story of how I kind of skipped. Vishwamitra came, the famous Vishwamitra, and he begged Raman Lakshman to come. So they went with him. So there is an interesting description. When they went to the ashram of Vishishta Muni to learn Dhanura, the Dhanura Vidya, the science of archery and fighting, ballistics, and how to fight, as how to be a Kshatriya. So King Dasharath went there with Ramachandra and Lakshman, Lord Ramachandra. And he was there in the ashram of Vishishta Muni. And he wanted to see, he wanted to witness, he wanted to watch his son Ram pick up the bow. Because in the Kshatriya tradition, this gives great happiness to the father, if the father is a Kshatriya. Just like you're a musician, say you're a Bengali kirtan leader, and you play mridanga. Now if you get a small mridanga for your child when he's 2 years old, 3 years old, and you just leave it sitting on the floor, and you let Junior loose, you know, you let him loose. You let the little boy start crawling, and you watch, what will he do? And he crawls over to the mridanga, and then somehow he tips it over exactly the right way, the dole or whatever they call it, you know, and he puts one side, and then he puts it in his lap, then he goes, he goes like this, and he starts playing. The father says, oh, Hanibal, he's going to be a great kirtanier. Just see how he picked up the drum exactly. He picked it up correctly. He put it on his lap. And he went like this, offering some prayer to the drum first. He went like this, and then he went like this. And he played it. So much happiness will be in the father, that great Sangeetacharya, that great music teacher. So for the Kshatriya, his pride and joy is his son. And how his son will carry on the dynasty. How his son,
Jayagornitai,
how his son will display his chivalry, his valor, his Kshatriya power. Because he will inherit the kingdom. He will become the next king. So he wanted to see, how will Ram pick up the bow? Because there are many things to consider here. It's not that, well, what's the big deal? You pick up the bow. But there's what we call, in English we use the word, he's a natural. He's a natural, like some little boy that doesn't know anything about music. He picks up a sitar and he starts playing, ding, 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 ding. Let's see. Hey, he's a natural. He knows this naturally. So when you go to pick up the bow, you can go and pick it up with your right hand. A little boy, you could say, pick up this bow. You've never shown him. You've never taught him any proper procedures. So he goes with his right hand and he picks it up. And he holds it like this. Then the father might think, doesn't look very good. How is he holding it? Why is he holding the bow in the right hand? And then maybe he's holding the bow. The bow is like this. There's a handle. There's a middle part. But he holds the bow by the end. He holds the bow. He picks up the bow with his right hand and he holds it by the end, or he holds it by the string. He's holding the bow. He's a little boy. He picks up the bow and he holds it by the string. And the father will think, oh, this doesn't look so auspicious. But if the son goes over to the bow, he's a young boy, 5 years old. He looks at the bow. And he takes his hand, his left hand, he puts it right on the grip, exactly on the handle of the bow. And he picks it up exactly, you know, like this. And he stands, and then as soon as he picks it up, something comes over him, a certain kind of bob, and he stands there and puts one foot back and one foot forward. And he puts his hand like this. He has no arrow, but he puts his hand like this. Or even puts his finger on the string, or two fingers, in a certain way. And he goes, and the father looks. He says, look, Dasa, look, Vashishtha, look, look, look. Look the way he picked up the bow. He's a natural. Look, hey, that's my son. That's my son you're looking at, see? He's a natural Kshatriya. He's going to be great. He hasn't even received one lesson about the bow. Look how he picked it up. So this is why it's a tradition among Vedic kings to go to the ashram of the guru and to see, to watch their son pick up the bow. You understand? So when Dasarath went to Vashishtha Muni's ashram, Vashishtha, he was sitting there waiting for that moment. And Lakshman was there, Lord Ramachandra was there. And then Vashishtha Muni, he said, my dear king, Dasarath, please, you have to go now. Please, you go. He said, no, but I want to see my son with the lift above. He says, yes, I... You know, it's our tradition of kings to watch the son the first time he lifts the bow. So Vashishtha Muni said, yes, it is a tradition among kings to watch their son lift the bow. But it is not the tradition among kings to produce a son by eating sweet rice. Vashishtha Muni is very clever, because Dasarath was using some logic. It is a tradition among kings to watch their son lift the bow. I am a king, this is my son, therefore, let me watch him lift the bow. So Vashishtha, he's very clever, he said, yes, it is a tradition, but my dear king, it is not a tradition for a king to produce a son by feeding sweet rice to his queen. So then Dasarath folded his hands and said, Jai Ho Maharaj, Jai Ho. I'm defeated. All right, carry on. And he left. Now, why did Vashishtha do this? Was he cruel and mean? Was he denying Dasarath of his right to see Ramachandra, the boy, this is the Komara Leela or the Fuganda, whatever age he was, the young boy's Leela of lifting the bow? No, he was not cruel at all. Actually, he was very compassionate. He was not Krura, he was Akrura. He was not cruel, he was Karuna. Because what he was about to do If Dasharath was to see that, Dasharath would become completely bewildered. Dasharath would become completely confused, and his Shraddha, his Guru Bhakti would go upside down, and and so many doubts would be created. So what was Vasishtha about to do? So after Dasharath had left the ashram, then Vasishtha Muni, he stood before Lakshman and Ramachandra and he folded his hands. And then he did pradakshina. He did parikrama four times around Lakshman and Ramachandra. Then he stood before them. He said, "My dear lords, I know who you are. You cannot conceal your identity from me. And I know that you are the source of all knowledge. Aham sarvasya pavavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajanti mam buddha bhava samanvitaham. Everything comes from you. You are the sarvakarana karanam. You are the cause of all causes. You are the supreme. You are controlling and moving everything and everyone. Somehow it is your leela. Whenever you appear in this world, you take a teacher. You accept a guru. When you come in Dwapar Yuga as Krishna, you accept Sandipani Muni. When you come in Kali Yuga as Gauranga," of course he didn't say that, but we can say, when you come as Gauranga, you accept your guru Gangadas to teach you Sanskrit. Gangadas Pandit is your Vyakaran guru. And then you take Diksha from Ishvara Puri, and you take Sannyas from Keshav Bharati. So in every avatar, you always take guru. This is your leela. So all the knowledge that I'm going to teach you, actually you already know. You know everything. But it's your leela that you want me to act as a teacher and you want to act as my shishya. So I will serve your leela. I will try to teach you this Dhanur Vidya. But please, if I make any mistakes, please forgive me. So then they began the teachings. So then, a few days later, Ram and Lakshman, they had not actually started yet their archery classes, because their archery means the dhanur, learning the bow and arrow. Because there are many other things that had to be learned, so they had not actually commenced. And Vasishtha was doing some yajna, or he was busy with some work. And the two boys were playing a little bit nearby, in the ashram, some distance away from their Gurudev, Vasishtha Muni. And they saw one lady walking along the path. She just had come from the river, and she was carrying a water pot on her head. She was carrying this big pot of water. And she had a ring in her nose. A nose ring, which is standard. Ladies, they wear a nose ring. But it's a very huge nose ring. Like in some provinces in India, they wear very big nose rings. Then Lakshman said to Ram, he said, "Hey, let's have some fun. See that lady with the pot of water in her head?" And Ram said, "Yes." He said, and then Lakshman said, watch this. So then there was an arrow lying there, because this is an ashram where you learn, just like in a music school, there's so many musical instruments lying around in a music school. So in a school of Dhanur Vidya, there's so many arrows and bows and swords and shields all lying everywhere around. So he picked up one arrow and then picked up a bow. Now they hadn't been instructed in how to control arrows or shoot arrows. But Lakshman said, "Ramachandra, watch this. Ram, watch this." So then Lakshman shot the arrow, and the arrow went right up to the nose ring of this lady carrying the water. And next to the nose ring, from the arrow, all this nectar, all this amrit started coming out of the arrow, falling on the nose ring. And the nose ring became smaller and smaller and smaller. And what happened, as it became smaller, it started to pinch her nose. It pinched her nose and she couldn't breathe. Oh. You lose something, you know, she started crying. "My nose ring! Bring it back! My husband gave it to me on my wedding day." So Lakshman, he looked at Ram and smiled. And Ram looked at him and communicated, we shouldn't give this lady too hard a time. So then Ramachandra gave me the bow. So he took the bow and he put an arrow and he shot the arrow. And the arrow went to Greater Kailash or wherever. It went 10 kilometers and it picked up that ring. It brought the ring all the way back and put it back on the lady's nose, exactly where it was. And the lady was like, my God! My God! And Lakshman said, yes, that's right. This is your God. This is God. This is Bhagavan. No, she didn't say that, but she was amazed. So like this, Ram and Lakshman spent their time at Vasishtha Muni's ashram playing with bows and arrows and learning all these things because that's what they were there for. And then, let's see, what else do you have? So that was that one. Well, then they went home. And Ram and Lakshman were home, and then with Dasarath, and then Vishramitra Muni, he came, as you know. He came to visit Dasarath. And Vishramitra Muni, he was prone to be very angry, and he was always cursing people. He would do so much tapa. He would get this tapa balam, great strength from his austerities. But then something would happen, someone would insult him, or he would imagine someone would insult him, then he would curse that person. And then he would lose so much of his tapa balam, strength of austerities. Then he would go back to Himalayas and do more austerities for another 1,000 years. And this way he was passing his life cursing people, doing austerities. This is how it's described. So whenever anyone saw Vishramitra, he was only moving somewhere simply to give someone trouble. So then they met the spies of Dasarath's kingdom. They said, coming on the footpath, Vishramitra Muni is coming right this way. He's only 2 kilometers away from your palace. And Dasarath was wondering, oh my, what's he coming here for? Did I do something wrong? Is he going to curse me? Well, why is he coming? And he was afraid that he's going to come and curse him or finish his kingdom or something. So Dasarath consulted with his ministers, and his ministers said, listen, you send a messenger to Vishramitra. You tell him, you give him this message. And the messenger should go to Vishramitra and say, listen, oh, Maharaj, Vishramitra, King Dasarath, he will give his entire kingdom to you. His entire kingdom he is offering at your lotus feet. And he himself is on his way to greet you. He knows you're on your way. He's coming down from the palace. He'll be here in a matter of minutes. Please relax. You know, here, have a lassi or whatever. You know, sit down, relax. Don't get angry. Don't get hot-headed. He's coming. And please don't pass any curses on our kingdom. So Vishramitra, that message was given. So then Vishramitra met Dasarath, King Dasarath. So then there was some discussion. Oh, when Dasarath came, the messenger said, Dasarath wants you to be peaceful, and I brought this nice asan for you. And Vishramitra said, I don't want any asan. Where's the king? Bring him here. By the time Dasarath got there, he fell at Vishramitra's feet and he said, what do you want? If you want the whole of Kosala, take it. What? I'm a rishi. I'm not into kingdoms. I had a kingdom once. You know, the story, he became a Brahmin, you know, he was a king before. I don't want your kingdom. I came here to ask for something, and you must tell me that you will give it. Dasarath was thinking, I wonder what he wants. Maybe my head. I don't mind giving him my head, but I hope he doesn't ask for Ram. Vishramitra said, what are you thinking? Are you trying to save something? Or you're trying to save something? Dasarath said, no. Just ask and I will give whatever you want. Vishramitra said, yes, I want Ram and Lakshman. Oh. Immediately Dasarath fainted. When he woke up, Vishramitra said, see, you fainted. This proves that you don't want to give. And you lied to me. I am a rishi and you lied to me that you will give me anything and what I want, and now you won't give. Listen, I'm not going to take them away forever. I only need them for a small purpose. I'm doing a yajna, and these demons are always coming and passing stool and urine on my yajna. I want them, these children, to come there and play, and then these demons will go away. What? Demons? Oh. And Dasarath fainted again. He says, what did you say? My little boys go and fight with demons? He couldn't bear that. And he said, look, I'll go, I'll defeat the demons. Vishwamitra says, no. Vishwamitra said, no, it's not that I can also defeat them myself. It's not that you have to come. Vishwamitra said, I could also kill them. Ram has to come. Ram has to come and do this. Because I have to teach him something. So then he said, all right. So then Ram and Lakshman, they went with Vishwamitra to his ashram, and they were crossing many rivers and going through the forest. And they were in the different rivers, they were playing, and they were swimming in the rivers with Vishwamitra. And they're having a wonderful time. They were so happy. Ram and Lakshman were so happy because there was no school. They were on vacation. This is described because they were not going to school anymore. They had a holiday, so they were just playing and swimming in the rivers. And he was such a nice teacher. Vishwamitra was swimming and playing with them, and he was telling them many far-out stories about ghosts and goblins, and they were enjoying all these stories. Then, as they approached Vishwamitra's ashram in the evening, he sat them down. He said, listen, I have to teach you some very powerful mantras. Bala mantra and Adi Bala mantra. And with these mantras, you will use these mantras tomorrow when the demons come to disturb my yajna when they come. So then they got to the ashram. The next day, Vishwamitra started his yajna. So then these two demons were coming, Maricha and Dushan. Anyway, he describes it as Maricha, and he describes in his own words, he says Maricha and Dushana. Anyway, it's different way, different demons may come. The basic Leela is the same, but this is how he describes it. Names may change. It's like sometimes Dainukasura is called Garbhadasura. The Dainukasura is called Garbhada. You'll see a Nectar Devotion. It's a completely different name. So someone might say, what's this? So at any rate, so these two demons, when they come, before they arrive, you can understand they're arriving because the stars are falling from the sky and there's the ground is shaking. So you know that these two demons are approaching. Vishwamitra Muni gave a signal to Ram and Bharata, yes, they're coming, so get ready. So then they were getting nearby, so then Lakshman, he took his arrow and he shot his arrow in the sky, a few arrows. And then one arrow became a million arrows, then two arrows, 10 million. So four millions of arrows, and they joined together and formed a chakra, a wheel, was spinning over the top of the yajna, Vishwamitra's yajna. This huge wheel was spinning. So as the two demons were approaching, then they saw, they said, what is this? Where's the yajna? I can't see the yajna. There's some huge wheel, something spinning in the sky. Then Maricha said, yes, this is some mystic power of the Brahmins. It's nothing. Don't worry about it. So then Maricha, he was leading the way, and he got closer. And when he got near the wheel, he hit the wheel and he got knocked away. And when he got knocked away, then Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra, he took a piece of grass, and he threw the piece of grass, and it landed on the back of Maricha, and it took him all the way to the ocean. He landed in the Indian Ocean. And then, in the words of Atmatattva, that Maricha, he was never seen again in India. He went down south in the ocean, he landed in Sri Lanka. He went to Sri Lanka and he opened an ashram, became a Babaji there. That's what he tells. doesn't seem that he has much appreciation of Babaji. He often uses it, he often mentions Babaji, some demon becomes a Babaji or something. It's some kind of funny feeling or something. Because he himself was previously a sannyasi, and previously he was a sannyasi doing tapu in the mountains. At any rate, so, and then Dushan, he was also killed. So then after the yajna, Vishwamitra, he sat with Lord Ram and Lakshman. He said, I have some questions. He said, these two powerful demons came, and I instructed you in this Bala Adibala mantras. But why didn't you use those mantras to defeat those demons? And Lord Ram said, oh no, those were small-time demons. They were small-time. A blade of grass was enough to kill them. I want to save those mantras you taught us for when we meet some serious challenge. But this Maricha and Dushana, they were small times. Oh, a blade of grass, one blade of grass is sufficient to kill them. So Vishwamitra was appreciating the omnipotence of his students, of Lord Ram and Lakshman. Oh, there's a whole story about the bow, about the marriage of Sita and Ram. Because of course, you know, there's this famous bow of Lord Shiva. And there's some pastime behind that Narada Muni, he's always, he's a mischief maker. He's a pure devotee of the Lord, Narayan Bhakta. And he's always spreading bhakti all over the world. He's always giving this bhakti, writing nice books, bhakti, Narada Bhakti Sutras and Narada Pancharatra and other things. But he likes to enhance and increase the pastimes of the Lord, because this is the nature of a pure devotee. He's always making arrangements for the Lord's pleasure. He's an instigator, he's a catalyst. He's a catalyst to bring pastimes to fruition and make pastimes happen. Just like Narada Muni went to Mathura and he informed Kamsa, you know, you're worried about the eighth son of Devaki will kill you. Well, the eighth son of Devaki has already been born. There wasn't a miscarriage. He's in Gokul and he's going to come and kill you. So Narada Muni and Kamsa said, what? And then, so someone might say, what is this? Narada Muni, he squealed on Krishna, or he revealed, why did Narada Muni tell the demon Kamsa where Krishna is living? It was only to and speed up the pastimes and to make the pastimes move along. So one time, Narada Muni, amongst the demigods, he created some lafra, some kind of debate. And so he arranged that there was a fight between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu. Who was most powerful, Shiva or Vishnu? So then Vishwakarma, he made, because they were now going to fight, Lord Vishnu is going to fight Lord Shiva. So now in order to fight, they have to fight on equal terms. So Vishwakarma made a bow. It's called Shiva Chapa and Vishnu Chapa or something. He made a bow for Lord Shiva. Then he made exactly the same bow for Lord Vishnu, so they would be equal. Now, so that everyone could see who's more powerful to have this fight. But the situation is that Lord Vishnu, one of his eternal associates is Sharanga. Sharanga is his danur, his bow. He sometimes takes the form of a danur and sometimes he has a regular Vishnu roop, forearm form, and he stands with folded hands on the side of Lord Vishnu waiting to serve him, and sometimes he takes the form of a bow. So, what happened when Vishnu received his bow, immediately, invisible to anyone else, Sharanga came there from Sharanga, the eternal associate of the Lord Vishnu. He came invisibly and he entered into that bow of Lord Vishnu. So he entered into that bow, although the bow was made by Vishwakarma, now that bow that was in the hands of Vishnu became Sharanga. That's right, Sharanga? That's his bow, it's called Sharanga. So now Vishnu had his bow, his invincible bow.
So this is all Leela. So then they started fighting, and Lord Vishnu shot a few arrows. Immediately, Lord Shiva, all his weapons were defeated, and he started running for his life. And then, so he had this bow. What to do with this bow after the fight? So that bow, it came into the kingdom. It came into the kingdom of Janaka, the Janaka's dynasty. And I guess tomorrow we can read about that. Because then it goes, there's a story about that, how it, because there's many, many Janakas, Janaka 1, Janaka 2, it's the name in that dynasty. So tomorrow we can continue more of these pastimes. Shri Ramachandra ki. The question that he's asking, because I'm not so, I'm reading these things, I'm not so familiar with Ramayana. I've read it. But the question that Ram Nam is asking, he's saying that when Vishwamitra came to beg Dasarath for his sons, was Vishwamitra aware of the transcendental identity of Dasarath's sons, that they were the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And because being... He did know. You're saying he did. Yes, he did know. He did know that they were the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu Tattva. And in order to bring about this Leela and bring out their glories, then he took them from... briefly took them for this excursion to his ashram, because it was all part of the Leela, because this is the Yudhya Leela of the Lord. Yudhya means fight. So Ramachandra, he's the ideal king. So king means Kshatriya. So Kshatriya means to protect by herding. A Kshatriya protects the people. Trayate. Katrayate. A Kshatriya delivers people from pain. So he's a Kshatriya. Shat, I think shat means to cut or to give pain. So a Kshatriya is that person who delivers someone from pain. So if the citizens are being afflicted by demons attacking them or tigers attacking them, then the Kshatriya will come and deliver them by his heroic prowess. So his duty is to protect the citizens. He is the protector. So he has to fight. So Ramachandra was enjoying so many fights. So Vishwamitra Muni wanted to facilitate his fighting pastimes. It's very glorious. In fact, Vishwamitra recited a famous verse. After that pastime, he recited a famous verse. He said, For a powerful, mighty person, even a blade of grass becomes an astra. Astra means weapon. Ramachandra is so powerful, he is the source of all bala. So what need is there for him to take bala and Adi Bala mantras? So he is saying that, he said like that, that grass is sufficient. Even so, a great person, he's glorifying, Vishwamitra's glorifying, just see the greatness of Lord Ram, that even with a blade of grass he can kill demons. That becomes an astra. So in Dwapara Yuga, there's also another example of a great person killing someone with a blade of grass. Lord Balaram. Ramaharshan Sutta. You know the pastime. Ramaharshan didn't show respect to Balaram when he entered the assembly of sages at, I believe it was Naimisharanya. Ramaharshan was speaking there, and he sat very proudly, like a second. What was it? What did he say? Balaram said, "You're like a second someone." Second. Who was it? You know, he saw Ramaharshan's behavior. And he said, "You're like a second, and like another so-and-so that didn't show respect. Daksha or something. You're like a second Daksha." Something, he made a comment. I can't remember. It's in Krishna book. At any rate, because he didn't show any respect to Balaram, and all the rishis, all the munis, all the sages, they stood up. Baladev ki jai ho, Lord Balaram ki jai ho, Baladev Bhagavan ki jai ho. But he sat there. So then Balaram, he wanted to teach him a lesson in humility, so he took the blade of grass, Trinadapi, Sunichena, Turari, Vasa, Hishnana. Trina means grass, so he's so powerful, simply he touched him with a blade of grass. And some acharyas say that he touched him with kusha grass. So he killed him, but he liberated him also, and because he's a Brahmin, so not ordinary grass, but kusha grass. because Kusha grass was there. He was sitting in the asan. There was Kusha grass and tiger skin and different things. So Balaram just took a piece of Kusha grass. So, like that. We don't have that kind of power, but we have the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and we can use that Maha Mantra to defeat, to conquer the demoniac mentality of the greatest demons. Somehow, if we can encourage them to hear the holy name on Sankirtan, their faith will develop, and gradually they can also become devotees. So the holy name is just as powerful as the greatest astra. Sangopangastra Parshadam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came into this world Sangopangastra Parshadam. He came in with his astras. There's a verse from the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. Yajna Sankirtana Priya Yajanti Sumedasha. That he came in Yajna Sankirtana, his associates, Nityananda, Advaita, Srivas, Gadadhar, they are his astras. So his astras are devotees. Devotees, they're the weapons of the Lord. And the weapon they have is the holy name of the Lord and Krishna's prasadam. So anyone who contacts this weapon, anyone who contacts the weapon of the holy name of the Lord, the astra, Mahamantra astra, the astra of the Mahamantra, he will develop all saintly qualities. The most proud materialist, the richest, most intelligent, most highly educated, an honored and decorated person, by contacting the weapon of the holy name, his pride will be defeated. All his asuric qualities will be defeated, and he will exhibit humility and all good qualities of a devotee simply by contacting the holy name of the Lord. We've seen politicians, kings, movie stars, big, big famous people, powerful people, beautiful people. They take a little contact with the holy name, and suddenly they become humble Vaishnavas. I've seen one Crorepati. There's one Crorepati in India, very famous Crorepati. He contacted the holy name. And after contacting the holy name, now he walks behind his guru, and he carries the guru's harmonium to Pandal programs. He contacted the holy name, he took diksha, became a devotee. Now his guru goes to some preaching program, and this huge Crorepati, who's famous all over India and practically the world, he humbly walks behind his guru carrying this harmonium so his guru can sit down and sing some sangeet before Pravachan. And everybody's looking. Huh? That big famous person who has hundreds of servants, he's one of the famous rich people of the world in India, especially India, he's acting like a common servant, just walking behind carrying the harmonium. Such humility, such dainya, such submission. How is it possible? And then they ask him, how? He said, I am a humble, I trinadapi sunichena tori vasya hishana. By serving the holy name of the Lord, by contacting the holy name, I realize that I am the dasano dasano das, Krishna dasano dasano das. Oh, what is your name, sir? Oh, my name is Krishna Chandra Das. I am a servant of that beautiful moon-like face, that Krishna with the beautiful moon-like face. That is my name. Oh, but I thought you were so-and-so in charge of this so-and-so, big industry. No, I am Krishna Chandra Das. I am simply a Das. I am not in charge of anything. I carry the harmonium. That's my service. So this is the power of the holy name. The question was, in the Mahabharata war, why are the Kshatriyas using so many Brahmastras and Agni Astras and Vayu Astras and so many Astras? Why don't they just get down and have a big kirtan and throw kartals and mardangas at each other? Anyway, I have to ask Vyasadeva that question.
Mahamantra.
No, that's not the point. The point was to have a fight. And Krishna is his name. He doesn't want to fight with his name. He wants to fight. It's Krishna likes to fight. And the Pandavas are Krishna's devotees. And so Krishna was enjoying. A father enjoys seeing his son engaging in activities. So Krishna was driving the chariot. He was enjoying seeing his devotees fighting. He was right there. He was telling Arjuna, hey, shoot this one. You know, he didn't take part, but no one knows whether he was speaking or not. You know? Anybody had a tape recorder on the chariot to secretly record Krishna's conversations? Maybe he told, hey, Arjuna, try your Agniastra. Hey, thanks a lot. Hey, that was a good one. Thanks a lot. That was a good suggestion. This is it. Arjuna, this is his loving devotee. It's not that for 18 days Krishna simply drove the chariot. No talking, no conversation, no recommendations. I mean, he's part of the Sarathi. He's also a Kshatriya in this Delhi side, no? You know, Krishna fought a few demons in his Krishna Leela in Dwarka and Mathura. In Vrindavan, he slapped a few around. He didn't use any weapons. So in different ages, Krishna uses different weapons. When Krishna comes in Treta Yuga, he uses bows and arrows for weapons. When he comes at the juncture of Dwapara Yuga, he uses his hands. In Vrindavan, he uses his hands and feet for weapons. Right? Krishna Vrindavan used his hands and feet. A slap here and a slap there. Then he went to Dwarka and he threw a few astras. Krishna, when he comes to fight in Kali Yuga, the astras he uses are the Hare Krishna mantra. So Mahabharata was not the setting. Using the holy names for astras is also there, and Krishna, when Krishna wants to use the holy name for astras, he uses them. And he uses the holy name for astras in Kali Yuga. But in Dwapara Yuga, and Treta Yuga, and Satya Yuga, he fights with weapons. So your question is answered in this way. When Madai threw the pot at Nityananda and cut his head, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ran there. And as soon as he ran there, all of a sudden his Chaitanya Dayal, we have his name, Chaitanya Dayal, the merciful, compassionate Lord Chaitanya, that form was hidden. And out of Lord Chaitanya, Sarva Avatari, out of Lord Chaitanya came Vishnu. And a Vishnu came out, enraged Vishnu, and he took his chakra, and he was spinning his chakra, a million miles spinning. He's about to slice off the head of Madai. This Vishnu Roop came out to protect the devotees. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was just in Radhabhav, and he was just absorbed in Brajabhav. So Vishnu Roop came out with this chakra. And Nityananda said, hey, back! Get back inside! Back inside! Nityananda said, no, Vishnu, get back. This is Chaitanya Dayal. You're interfering with this mercy leela. Back. And he pushed back. And he put Vishnu back inside there. The chakra went back inside. And Lord Nityananda preached to him, hey, and started preaching to him. Because he's older brother. Nityananda's older brother. He's like 25 years older. He's Balaram. He's 25 years older than Lord Chaitanya. He said, listen, no chakras. Don't kill them. You use the chakras in Dwapara Yuga and in the Mahabharata. But now, take the holy name. Use the weapon of the holy name. Deliver them with the holy name. Or she said, yes, 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 that's right. Those weapons are for the other fighting. This is now we have to fight with the demoniac mentality. We have to defeat the demoniac mentality with the Hare Krishna mantra. So like that. The Maha Mantra is when Krishna wills and wants to use it that way, he does. But Mahabharata was time for Agniastras and Vayuastras and Brahmastras. But at the same time, they always, whenever they use these astras, they're also chanting Nam. Because they're also the name is there. The only reason these astras have power, because first they chant mantra. They don't just whip out an arrow and say, okay, do it. Woo! Okay, arrow, do your thing. Zip, and then the arrow goes out and creates a mountain and creates waterfalls and creates all kinds of, you know, atomic bombs. No, they have to chant mantras. Even in Mahabharata. And what first mantra they chant? Om. Om is Krishna Nam. That is the name of Krishna. So even in Mahabharata, like you're saying, why didn't in the Mahabharata, why didn't they use the Maha Mantra? They did use the Maha Mantra, but they used it in the form of Om. Om is also Radha and Krishna. The Maha Mantra is also Radha and Krishna. Now there's different ways to answer your question. Srila Prabhupada ki. Continue from yesterday's discussion, present some of the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, because tomorrow is the auspicious day of his Avirbhav Tithi Mahotsav. Om Angana Timirandasya Angananjana Sharakaya Chakshuram Nitamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Anandali Ramaya Vigrahaya Himavad Vyachari Sundaraya Tasmai Maha Prema Rasa Padaya Chaitanya Chandraya Namo Namaste Vamsha Kalpa Truvyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Titanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. We mentioned something yesterday about the fight between Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva and how they were both using bows. And Vishnu's
Sharanga entered into that bow that was produced by Vishwakarma, and Vishnu defeated Lord Shiva.
And then that bow actually came into the dynasty of Janak Maharaj. So we'll discuss that, and then the marriage of Sita with Lord Ram. After Ram's fight with the demons Maricha and Dushana, Vishwamitra did not bring the boys directly back to Ayodhya. Instead, he told them, there is going to be a big fire sacrifice in Mithila. King Janak was ruling. So Vishwamitra said, a great sacrifice and all the rishis and pundits will be there. I will take you there so you can see it. A description of how the king of how Mithila got the name Mithila, and how Janak got the name Janak. Janak, King Janak, as you know, is the father of Sita Devi. Vishwamitra's ashram, now known as Lucknow, and from there they went up to Mithila. Mithila is the country of Janak Maharaj. It is known as Mithila because long before Janak, there was one king, the Ikshvaku dynasty. He asked the Kula Guru of the Ikshvaku dynasty, Vasishtha Muni, if he could perform a yajna. And Vasishtha Muni said, yes, I will perform that yajna, but first I have to go to Indraloka and do one yajna there. Before Vasishtha Muni returned to this king of the Ikshvaku dynasty, that king, he engaged some other Purohit and they performed the yajna. Vishwamitra returned and he said, what? You didn't wait for my return? I told you I would perform the yajna. Why are you so impatient? So then, Vasishtha is the Kula Guru, not Vishwamitra, Vasishtha. So then Vasishtha said, why are you so impatient? He said, I curse you to become near Deha. You'll be near Deha. You'll lose your body. You'll be without a body. So then the king of the Ikshvaku dynasty, he was also very powerful, he cursed Vasishtha to become near Deha. Now there's a long story how Vasishtha was wandering here and there, and he came in contact somehow with some rishis and sages, and they put him into a pot. And there was another sage in that pot. It was, Agastya, yes. Agastya Muni was also in that pot. And later, they both were born as pot brothers, so to speak. And Vasishtha was known as Kumbha Muni. He says Kumbha Muni.
So Kumbha Muni means that sage that was born from the pot. So the king, this king of Ikshvaku, he died. I mean, he was near Deha, so he was wandering around, eventually gave up his body. He went to the heavenly planets. But somehow he left some body behind. Now his successors, they were thinking the saints and rishis of that region where he was ruling, they were thinking how to carry on the dynasty. So then they took his body of this king of Ikshvaku dynasty, and they churned his body. They held one foot, and then they took one leg, and there's a process which you see in the Bhagavatam, in the production of King Prithu. King Prithu was, they churned the body of King Venu in some elaborate process, like you're churning butter, you churn yogurt. And from yogurt you get this, or you from churning milk. From churning milk you get this solid substance called butter. So they churned his body and they produced a king. So the way it's described is that, so in this way, they say that this process of churning, churning is called miti. When that process, so they churn this body of this king in the Ikshvaku dynasty, they churn his body, so that process is called miti. So the king that was produced from the churning of that body was known as Miti Janaka. Janaka means one who is produced, or one who is born by churning. Miti Janaka. So the man came out of that body, he was called Miti Janaka. Jana means birth, and Janaka means
one who has taken birth by churning.
So this king, Miti Janaka, he didn't want to be an Ayodhya because of all the prestige that the family had. So he left Ayodhya and created a separate kingdom. And that kingdom became known as Mithila. Because the Miti Janaka created that kingdom. So the kingdom created by Miti Janaka became known as Mithila. And all his sons, all the sons of that king, which this is long, long before Ramachandra, all the sons of that king were known as Janaka. It's like sometimes in the Western countries they have that system that the son is named after the father. And my father's name was Hari. His name was Henry. We called him Harry, like Hari. So he was Henry the Third. And my brother was Henry the Fourth. But I was something else. Miti Henry. So like that, this Janaka 1, Janaka 2, Janaka 3. So Janaka had a great property in his palace. The property was the bow used by Mahadev, which I mentioned, this bow or dhanur that was used in the fight between Lord Shiva and Vishnu. And somehow it was given to his dynasty. It was given, this bow of Lord Shiva that was used in the fight between Vishnu was given to one of the Janakas. It's not the original Janaka who was made from churning. But seven generations after the original Miti Janaka, then that there was a Janaka who was called Devarata. Devarata. This king Devarata was very attractive to the devatas, so he was known as Devarata. Somehow he received Shiva's bow and he kept it in the palace as a worshipful object. Sometimes they say he kept it in the puja room. And this bow was huge. This bow of Lord Shiva was inconceivably, it was so big. To give you some idea,
It would take 300 soldiers, really strong soldiers. Like, we don't have any like that in the temple. I can't say like Kratu or like me, or because we're little, like, you know, Kali Yuga shudras, you know, little tiny bodies. No, there's no, what kind of country is this? So we don't have anything close to a country in this whole room here. But anyway, these huge Kshatriyas, 300 of them, somehow they got under the bow and he moved it and they put it on a rath, on a cart. And then those same, it was so heavy, the bow, that it took those same 300 soldiers to pull on a cart with so many wheels. They pulled the bow and somehow they installed that bow in the puja room of Devarata Janaka's palace. So Janaka had a brother, and his brother had three daughters. And as you know, Janaka had one daughter named Sita. So Sita and these three daughters, they used to play together. Sita and these three daughters of Janaka's brother. So these four girls were always running around the palace and playing. So one day, they were out picking some flowers for doing puja. And the flowers are a little high in the tree, so being Kshatriya daughters, Sita Devi is very clever. So she got one stick, and on the end of the stick she put one piece of one hook. She fixed one hook there on the end of the stick. And they were reaching up and they were catching flowers for puja. It was like a game. The girls were playing this game, picking flowers. And then Sita Devi, she saw one tree that had very, very fragrant and beautiful flowers on it. So then she reached up, because they weren't very high on the tree. She reached up in the tree to pick those flowers, and she just almost got the flower. But suddenly, there was some type of mystical being living in that tree. So as she reached up to catch the flower, then the tree grew 1 foot. The tree went like that, and then the flower on the tree, it also, of course, went 1 foot, 12 inches beyond her reach. And then she got on her girlfriend's shoulders, her sister's, cousin's sister's shoulders, and then she said, come on, let's get that flower. And then she was about to get the flower, then the tree went up again. And she's... Well, she was, what kind of tree? You know, I'm the princess. This is my kingdom, my father's kingdom of Mithila. And I want these flowers. And then they got up on top of each other, like they made like a triangle. Then she got up on the top to make even higher. Then the tree went again. And she said, it was way beyond her stick and there was no way to get that flower. Then she thought, oh, I know. There's that big bow in the puja room. That's very long. I'll go pick that up and I'll get the flower with that. So Sita Devi, she was a young girl, maybe 5, 6, very small girl, baby girl like these little girls here. And then she went in the puja room and she picked up the bow and she went outside and she reached up and she got that flower. And she went back and put the bow in the puja room and that was that. And some people saw this, and they said, what? And they couldn't believe it, this little girl. So they ran, so this, what, some servant lady or something, she saw, she ran and she told Janak, she says, Janak, your daughter, you know, some nurse or something, so your daughter, she just picked up the bow of Shiva, Mahadev's Danur. And she carried it outside, plucked the flower from the tree and put it back. And Janaka Maharaj says, oh, you're crazy. Put some lemons on your head or something. You know, you should put a few lemons on your head to cool your head down. Get lost. And then some other person came, someone from the garden, the Mali came. The gardener came and said, Maharaj, ki jai ho, Maharaj. Your daughter just picked up Mahadev's bow. And you say, oh no, another crazy person. What's happening to my kingdom? So immediately, Janaka Maharaj put in an order. He said, he ordered 1,000 lemons. He ordered 1,000 lemons, you know, nibu, you know, lemons. In English we say lemons. He ordered 1,000 nibu. And he said, bring those nibu and put them on the head of all my subjects. They're becoming crazy. They're going crazy. You have to cool them down. And then one of his ministers came. Maharaj Ki Jai Ho. Janaka Maharaj, your daughter just picked up Mahadevi's bow, walked out, got the flower, put it back. Really? You're my advisor, my minister, my brahminical advisor, you're telling me this? I must believe it. So he went and he saw the bow in the puja room, and he went to Sita Devi, he called her, did you pick up this bow? Oh yeah, yes, I needed it. There was one flower I wanted to get for puja, so that was the longest thing available, so I... Acha. Oh, maybe I need some lemons. Janaka's thinking, maybe I need to put a few lemons here. What am I hearing? What's going on? And then Janaka asked the minister, how is this possible? This is 300 of our strongest soldiers that are like elephants, as strong as elephants. They can't pick up this bow, my little girls. So the minister said, let me think about this for some time. So the minister thought about it for some time. And then he came back to Janaka Maharaj and he said, actually, in my meditation, I had one dhyan spurti, I had one vision, that your daughter, Sita, is actually Mahalakshmi. She is the incarnation of Mahalakshmi. So naturally she has unlimited shaktis. She's Sarva Shakti Mayi. She is strong. She can lift universes. But to speak of one insignificant bow of Shiva. So then Janaka was thinking, Acha, my daughter is Mahalakshmi? So that's what the minister said. You can see also from all her bodily features to now by showing, because they didn't really take so much notice before, but now that she displayed this extraordinary aishvarya, this strength, then he was saying, yes, I can see she showed incredible strength in lifting this bow, and her bodily features are all the features of Lakshmi, the auspicious features. So then Janaka said, well, if my daughter Sita is Lakshmi, then naturally her lord is Narayan. So now we have a problem. How will we get Narayan to marry my daughter? And then the minister said, well, there's no Narayan here. There's no Narayan here in this kingdom. How are you going to get Narayan to marry your daughter? Then Janaka came up with an idea. Anyone who can take this bow and string it will marry my daughter. This is an idea. All the ministers laughed. They said, in this way? And they said, Janaka Maharaj, if you do this, if you make this demand, then your daughter will never be married. Because there's no one in this entire world, there's no single man that can lift this bow and string it. It's impossible. Janaka said, listen, Narayan obviously knows that Lakshmi is here. He's not going to leave her unmarried. She's not going to take woman sannyas or something like that. No, Narayan must come here. Everyone was shocked. What is this man doing? What is he saying? This is as good as to insist that Narayan must come here. This is as good as saying that his daughter will never marry. That's what the minister said. Anyway, this was going on, and then a yajna was performed. But the special feature of this yajna is that they were going to bring the bow and put the bow for darshan, Danur darshan. And all the countries in the region would be invited to come and try. So
So Vishwamitra knew this. So when Vishwamitra, as we started, was bringing Ram and Lakshman back from his yajna, he said, "Oh, before I take you back to Ayodhya, we should stop in Mithila. There's a big yajna going there. Many rishis are there. You'll have a good fun. It's lots of fun. You'll see big yajna. You'll have a good fun." So Ram and Lakshman are thinking, "Great, more fun, no school. Because if he takes us back to Ayodhya, we have to go back to school. Now we've been on a nice vacation, swimming in the rivers, playing in the forest. He told us so many stories of ghosts and goblins. And a couple demons came, we threw a piece of grass. That was fun. But if we go back to Ayodhya, we have to go back to school, and we have to learn all this art, you know, so many things. And this is fun, we're on vacation. Chuti. I thought we were going home, and that means back to school, but we're going to Mithila to see a yajna. Oh, fun, great." So they're very excited. But Vishwamitra is simply acting to move the pastimes of the Lord to their fruition, to their perfection. So then he told them, Vishwamitra told Lakshman and Ram, he said, "This is the bow that was used by Lord Shiva. That you will see, and if you want, I will take you there to see the bow." "Oh yes, we want to see the bow, we want to see the bow." So then Ram and Lakshman came there. And the rest of the story is known. We know the rest of the story. But we will only explain to you the parts of the story which are not so well known. So then all the Kshatriyas came and they were examining the bow, and Janaka told Janaka told Vishwamitra, "Oh, Vishwamitra, you must call your young student to come have a look at this bow." So Ramachandra came and he saw it. And Lakshman said, "Why don't you try it?" And Janaka announced, "If anyone wants to try and string this bow and receive my daughter, then please step forward." So one or two very puffed up Kshatriyas stepped forward. The first one could not lift it. And another got his hand stuck between the floor and the bow. You know, he lifted the bow, but then he lifted it enough to get his hand under it. And then, "Oh, mommy!" What kind of country is that? So then somehow they got his hand out from under the bow. And suddenly, the whole assembly became dark. Even though it was around 11 o'clock in the morning, it was in the morning time, it became like night. And the earth was shaking like an earthquake. And then they heard someone laughing very loudly. So then Janaka caught hold of Vishwamitra's hand and said, "Tell me what's happening." Vishwamitra said, "This must be a demon. Very soon he will enter this assembly." And another 3 minutes went by. Then there was a flash of light. And from that blinding effulgence came Sri Lokeshwara, Ravana. He arranged before that the two other demons would precede him and announce, "Sri Lokeshwara, Ravana is coming." Everyone was scared. "Hey, what is this demon doing in our temple room? In our assembly." So then Ravana appeared. "What is this, Swayamvara? You are all spineless people. You are powerless. You can't even lift this bow. You must all certainly know who I am. I am Ravana. I have lifted Kailash with Lord Shiva sitting on the top of it. This is only his bow. This is the bow of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva, his whole family, his entire troop of Bhutas and Pretas, the whole of Kailash Mountain was lifted by me. And I flew to Lanka. That is my strength." So then everybody thought,
he can easily lift the bow. So Ravana came. He put his hands on each side. And he lifted the bow. Everyone was amazed. Oh, he's lifted the bow. Then Lord Shiva in Kailash was thinking, what's going on? I didn't leave that bow there in Janaka's kingdom for him. I left it for Lord Ram. So then, invisibly, Shiva entered inside the bow and he pressed it down. Ravana got stuck. Actually, that also happened when he lifted Kailash Mountain. When he put it down again, he got stuck under the mountain. His hand got stuck. Now he was again stuck. He was crying. And he was pleading. When a demon suffers, we should laugh. Kali's being pushed back by the Sankirtan movement. Great! There was a play in New York once by the Vaikuntha Players. The Vaikuntha Players were Prabhupada's disciples in 1976 in the temple, the big skyscraper. That's Prabhupada would say. And the devotees were, the play was called The Age of Kali. So Kali personified came out on the stage, and he was engaging everyone. Everyone around him was drinking and taking drugs and doing all kinds of sinful activities. And Kali was there, and Kali was dancing, and everyone was doing sin around him. This was the play. A very dark and terrible scene of Kali Yuga. Kali had entered, and he was creating, and Prabhupada was watching. And then, from on the way far away, the lights, very bright lights shone over there. And then a Sankirtan party came. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Like that, and they were coming out with the same melody. And then, when Kali heard the Sankirtan party, he didn't want to hear that. He didn't want to hear that kirtan. And then when Kali went like Kali personified went like this, and Prabhupada saw that, he motioned to the kirtan party, louder, chant more, chant loud. Prabhupada went, bolaye, bolaye. So they went, they chanted louder. And then Kali was saying, I can't breathe. He was suffering. And all the devotees were laughing. Because Kali was being, and Prabhupada said, more kirtan, more kirtan. So as they increased the kirtan more and more, Kali was making suffering more and more. And the devotees were laughing. And Prabhupada was laughing. And he was clapping his hands. Yes, yes, very good. Kali should be smashed. Smashed down. So it's okay if the devotees laugh when the demons are getting smashed. So, he got stuck. Ravana is stuck under the bow. He was crying. And finally, Lord Shiva let go, and he got his hand out. And then Ram came. But unlike Ravana, Ravana used two hands to pick up the bow. Ram came with one hand, picked up the bow with one hand. He put his foot on the other end of the bow and he took the string and he pulled it and the bow broke into two pieces. Everyone clapped their hands and flowers fell from heaven. Then, as you know, Ramachandra married Sita. And the other three girls were married, the daughters of Janaka's brother, that were the friends of Sita, cousins. They were married to Bharata, Shatrughna, and Lakshman. So, okay. So now, kind of just some other things. This is a little bit, we want to get into the fighting and what leads up to the fight. So actually, of course, you know there was a great fight between Ravana and Ram. That's very good. But first we want to give a little biographical data about Ravana. Of course, Ravana made the biggest mistake in his life by kidnapping Sita. Ravana was a great scholar and a pundit. He was known as Shastra Jnan. He knew all Shastras. In all the Vedas, Ravana was expert. Nobody at the time of Ravana had as expert a pronunciation of Sanskrit as Ravana did. Even in the assembly of the demigods, when they held sacrifices, they would bring Ravana to chant the shlokas. How do you like that? Everyone heard that? So he makes a comment. If someone is chanting Sanskrit slokas very nicely, that does not necessarily mean he's a great devotee. Demons are also chanting Sanskrit verses. Ravana read all the Vedas, yet due to his lust, he could not even accept that another man's wife should not be taken. Ravana's lust was exemplary. And there's a whole story about how he was doing a yajna himself, Ravana, and he invited Agni Dev to come. So Agni Dev came along with his wife, Swaha. And Ravana was doing this big yajna, and he was offering oblations to the demigods he invited. So Agni came with Swaha, and as soon as Ravana saw Swaha, he said, "Hell with the yajna," and he grabbed Agni's wife and ran away with her. And all the priests were saying, "Hey, Ravana, wait a minute, what about your yajna?" He said, "Forget it. This is a better yajna fall than anything." So he ran away with Agni's wife, Swaha. So this was he was very expert at stealing the wives of demigods and other people. So now the question is, what made Ravana a demon? Of course, we already told you, it was uncontrollable lust. But at any rate, so Ravana knew all these different mantras, but why was he a demon? He was the son of Vishravas. He is a Brahmin. He is not a Kshatriya. He is the grandson of Brahma and a very learned pundit. But still, he is a demon. What makes Ravana a demon? He's a demon because he does not accept that the Supreme Lord is the enjoyer, the controller, and the friend of everyone. Bhagavad Gita 5:20. He knows all the Vedas. Ravana studied all the Vedas. He knows all the shlokas. But he hasn't realized Bhagavad Gita chapter 5, verse 29. Bhoktaram yagatapasam sarva loka maheshram suridam savadeham bhutanam gyatvamam shantarichati. He doesn't realize this. Because he was not accepting the sovereignty of the Supreme Lord, Ravana was thinking, "I am the Lord." That is why he called himself Trilokeshvara Ravana. Trilokeshvara, as you know, means the controller of the three worlds. That was his desire. That was his ambition. Even though he couldn't control the common cold, he wanted to control the three worlds, but he couldn't control a flu. You know, a flu, the nose gets stuffed up, you get a fever. So Ravana, like any mortal being, he would also get vyadi, janma mritu vyadi, he would also get sick. So he wants to control the three worlds, but he can't even keep himself from getting the flu. Like anyone else, the biggest kings, the biggest controllers, they also get sick. So Ravana, in any case, Ravana received so many curses, so many people cursed him. He was also cursed by one sage that a monkey would come and burn his city. And he was also cursed that a monkey would spit on his face. That was Sugriva. And he would be killed by human beings who were surrounded by monkeys. This was all predicted. So Ravana knew this. This was like his Bhrigu Samhita. Bhrigu Samhita, you know about the future and the past. So he knew. He already knew. It was not a surprise. I will be killed by this, in this situation. So even though Ravana had 10 brains, he could not accept this because of his lust. Ravana did not carry 10 heads all the time. If he lost one head, another head would come. And if he lost that head, the previous one will come back again. Why? Because he kept his life point somewhere else. He didn't keep it in his body.
He did not keep his life point in the neck or the chest. This was one of the tricks of the lizard. Tricks of the demons. They would keep their life point somewhere else. They may keep their life point in a bird, in a lizard, or a lotus flower. And from there, they extend their power. If you killed him, killed his body, or slashed him, or did anything to him, he would not die because his life was being kept somewhere else. So these heads on Ravana's body were coming whenever one was removed. And these 10 heads possessed 10 kinds of intelligence. That was a benediction he got from Brahma. One of Ravana's heads was expert in politics. One head was expert in Vedic Dharma. One in administration. One head was expert in how to enjoy. Another was expert in making travel plans. Well, that's good. He had a built-in travel agent. One head was a travel agent. In this way, when he was going to take Sita, he consulted all the 10 heads. 9 heads refused. 9 of Ravana's heads refused to his proposal to kidnap Sita. They said, no, don't kidnap Sita. Only one of his heads refused to listen to that instruction. So although Ravana had so many powerful things and so many mystic powers, by exploiting the property of the Supreme Lord, Ravana met his death. And so, now, as you know, Ravana, of course, he disguised himself as a Vairagi, and he kidnapped Sita. Then Ram was searching everywhere for Sita. Then he met Hanuman, and then everyone was helping him look for Sita. He looked everywhere, but he couldn't find Sita. This is Hanuman. Hanuman has jumped across the ocean, and he's landed in Lanka, and he's toured the palace, and he's seen all the drunken queens, and they've seen Ravana. He searched, and he couldn't find Sita. So then he was on his way back, and he was thinking, "Oh my, what? How can I return? I haven't found Sita." So before he returned to the ocean, he thought, "There's a garden there. I see one garden that I haven't actually looked in. And I see in that garden, there's some huge Ashok trees." So Hanuman was lost in reverie. He was thinking, yes, in Panchvati, Ram, he told me when he was in Panchvati that Sita Devi was staying up, they were staying under some Ashok trees. And after Ravana kidnapped Sita, Lord Ram was feeling so much separation, so much unhappiness, and crying and crying. And that Ram, he went to those Ashok trees. And he was embracing those Ashok trees in Panchvati. And he was crying, "Oh Ashok trees, you're standing right here. You're standing right here. This is right, and this is right below you. This is where Sita was kidnapped by some demon. You saw everything. Please." And Ram was crying, and he was praying. Ram was praying to these Ashok trees. "Please tell me. Please speak to me. Tell me who has taken my queen. Who has taken my Sita, my Pranavallabha, the beloved of my life. Who has taken my Sita?" So Hanuman remembered how Ram was telling him that he was crying and praying even to the trees. He was praying to the trees that, "Please tell me, where is Sita? Where is Sita?" So when Hanuman saw those Ashok trees, he remembered that. He said, "Oh, there were Ashok trees there. There's Ashok trees here. Possibly, maybe Sita is there in that Ashok van. And maybe Sita is also, maybe she's also crying out to those Ashok trees to please communicate to your brother Ashok trees in Panchavati that I'm here and my Ram will somehow come and save me. So maybe Sita is also there." So then, in one leap, Hanuman jumped and he landed on a big Ashok tree. When he looked down, to the surprise of Hanuman, he saw right below the tree a beautiful queen was Mother Sita. She was sitting there with Vibhishana's daughter, Trijata. Trijata was trying to console her and pacify Sita Devi. Then Trijata told a dream. She told Sita, "I had a dream last night. I had a dream that Ravana was smearing oil all over his body. And he was drinking oil with two hands. He was drinking oil. And he was sitting on a chariot driven by monkeys. This chariot was being driven through the southern side. This means he will die. I also saw that Sri Lanka was burning and a monkey was flying over. I also saw Ramchandra was sitting in the coronation with you. So don't lose faith. Don't give up your body. One day or other or another, Ramchandra will come here." Hanuman was listening to all of this and he became so happy. Then suddenly Ravana entered the Ashokvan and he started preaching to Mother Sita. Or at least not preaching, but it says preaching, but started speaking to her. "You must marry me. Never!" Then he said to Ravana said to the demonesses, the Asuris, Rakshashis, he said to the Rakshashis, "Kill her! If she won't listen to your advice." Then the demonesses were preaching to her, that's what he said. The demonesses were preaching to her. And when she wouldn't listen, they decided, "We will kill her." Exactly at that point, Hanuman jumped. Hanuman jumped on the ground. And when the Rakshashi saw this monkey jumping, they fled this way and that. Sita looked at him and she said, "Ravana, you can take any form you want, but I'm not going to be attracted to you." Hanuman said, "Wait, wait, I'm not Ravana. I'm a servant of Ram. And I've come here to serve you." Sita said, "I don't believe it. If you are from Ram, how did you cross the ocean?" Hanuman said, "Oh, that's very interesting. I grew big." "You grew big? How can monkeys grow big?" Hanuman said, "Grow big." Hanuman said, "I will show you." Then he grew and he grew and he grew and in a second he was touching the sky and the clouds. Sita got very scared. "Oh no, maybe this is another demon." Well, you can imagine, it's only natural. Who wouldn't think like that? But there was something strange about this monkey. While he was growing and growing, he was chanting, "Ram, Ram, 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 Ram." And then Sita was thinking, this could not be Ravana. He would not chant so many Ram Nams. It's not possible. He can't be a demon. Then Hanuman reduced his form. He said, "Listen, I have some proof that I am coming from Ramachandra. Here is his ring." Then Hanuman talked with Mother Sita, and then she gave him her chudamani, her hair ornament. Okay, read a little bit about the battle. In the area of Mahipuri, Nila, the engineer of the Vanara army, reconstructed a city. This is Mahiravana's city. Mahiravana's nephew, oh, that's the one that says come out and go in. They would eat rishis or something like that, and then they would call them out of their belly or something. Mahi and Ahi or something. I heard that. So anyway, the war was different. This war between Ravana and Ram was different than Kurukshetra. Day and night the fighting was going on. Demons are very powerful after sunset. And a lot of damage was done to the monkey army. especially when Indrajit came on the battlefield, and then Kumbhakarna came. The monkey suffered a lot. Indrajit used a lot of illusory techniques by becoming invisible. At one point, he made Ram and Lakshman unconscious with his Pashupat Astra. Then, on the advice of one of the great doctors of the Vanara army and Vibhushana, Hanuman flew to the Himalayas and brought back the Pushpa Sanjeevani mountain. Of course, you know that story. The fight was going on, and everyone had very powerful weapons. Indrajit had a benediction that he would be killed. Only while he was performing a sacrifice can someone stop him. So because Indrajit was very powerful, he was thinking, who would dare stop me while I'm performing a sacrifice? In between the war, he disappeared and went to a secret place to perform a sacrifice. The Bhishana knew, and he brought Hanuman and Angada here. They contaminated the sacrifice. They acted like monkeys. They acted like monkeys and contaminated the sacrifice. And they pulled him out. And there was a big fight. And then finally, Lakshman killed Indrajit. One by one, everyone was killed. And only Ravana was left. The demigods helped a lot in the war. Indra sent his chariot and driver, Matali. And Ramachandra was using Indra's chariot. Ram broke Ravana's chariot. He killed his charioteer and his horses, broke his bow, broke his club and flag, and he said, "All right, Ravana, I will give you some time. You go today, and you come back tomorrow, and you make the good decision of giving Sita back to me. If you do that, everyone who is dead will come back to life. You will get all your opulences back, as if nothing ever happened. People will forget everything, will forget what they knew of you, and you will be known again as a noble, famous king. I will go back to Ayodhya, and you and I will have a good friendship." Ravana felt that these words of Ram were a great insult. He felt a great insult that Ram didn't kill him on the spot. So he went back to his palace. Then he remembered that Lord Shiva told him, "If you ever get in danger, you must call me. I will save you." There is a Veena known as the Rudra Veena. This is a personal instrument of Lord Rudra, Shiva. That was lying with Ravana. Ravana took that Veena and he started singing prayers and praise of Lord Shiva. Ravana Veena. Like we have Narada Muni. Ravana Rakshasa. So he played his Veena, like there's a song by Bhakti Vinod. Narada Muni Bhajaya Veena Radhika Ramana Name. Right? Narada Muni Bhajaya Veena Radhika Ramana Name. That he is playing with his Veena, and his Veena is singing Radhika Raman, Radhika Raman. So Ravana picked up his Rudra Veena and he started singing Bam Bam Bole Shankar Bhagavan Ki, and all songs Shiva Sangeet. Ashutosh, Lord Shiva is easily pleased. He immediately came before Ravana and said, "Why did you call me?" Ravana said, "My life is in danger." Shiva said, "How is your life in danger? You tell me." Ravana said, "Well, I took the wife of the son of Dasarath, and he came here with his monkey army, and they have killed everybody. Even Kumbhakarna, Indrajit, everyone is gone. I'm the only one left. And that king insulted me by telling me, 'You go. I won't kill you today. Come back tomorrow.' So over and above everything, I'm insulted, Mahadev. Please save my prestige and my life." Lord Shiva said, "Yes, I must save your life. I will save your life. Here, I'm saving your life. Give Sita back." Shiva told Ravana, give back Sita. Ravana said, no! Oh, the same thing again. You're cheating me. You promised me you would save my life, but you're not doing it. Shiva said, no, I am saving your life. Did I say that to save your life I would go and fight with someone? I have my own method of saving your life. Please take my good advice. Give back Sita, everything will be wonderful. Ravana said, no, I expected that you would go and fight with Ram and finish him off. Shiva said, I don't mind. I can go and fight with Ram, but I will be finished. Ravana said, no, I'm not going to give back Sita. Lord Shiva said, all right, then you will die. Who can protect you? Then the next day, Ravana came before Ramachandra. When he came, Ramachandra was standing there holding his bow. Even to carry that bow was very difficult. It was much, much bigger than the body of Lord Ram and very heavy. Lord Ram used to hold that bow as if like he was holding a piece of grass. It was bigger than him, it was a huge bow. It was like it was a piece as light as a piece of grass. When Ravana came, he saw Ram and he folded his hands. Ravana came before Ram and he folded his hands. Pratana, Anjali. Vibhishana and Lakshman, when they saw that, they said, Jai! Finally! He's surrendering! Then the next moment, Ravana said, what am I doing? No, I'm here to fight with you. Then Ram fired his arrow and he finished Ravana. So, that's the end of Ravana. Ramachandra ki! Srila Prabhupada ki!